Blog Talk Radio.
You're in the screening room, and I'm going to leave you there just a minute, and then we'll get going. Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Trundlebed Trails Radio, and I'm so glad that you could come and join us tonight. We had a little trouble getting hold of Steve, but I think we're all ready to go now, which is great. Before we get going with him, though, I do want to take a moment and turn to some housekeeping. I changed my sound effect for that. Since people were having trouble recognizing the sweeping, we're going with washing dishes now, since that's something else that Laura did an awful lot of. And I want to remind everybody that if you want to call in, you certainly can. It's 714-242-5253, 714-242-5253. Toll-free, 1-877-633-9389. 1-877-633-9389. And if you ever find yourself out and about during one of the episodes and you want to listen in, you can also call in that way and just listen. You don't have to talk. I'm going to have a bit of a fog in my throat tonight, but I hope it won't be too bad and that you'll be able to tell what's going on. I also wanted to tell you that our episode that we did, the April update, now that the Laura Ingalls Wilder event season has sort of started, I did a 15-minute kind of catch-up what was going on in Laura fandom this month for April, and it is going great guns, so I will keep on doing that for the season. So look for one at the beginning of May. And May 4th, I'm going to have my next episode, and that is going to be Seeking Laura Letters, and it's going to be talking about my project to try and get copies of the letters that Laura wrote and get them deposited in the Walnut Grove Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum. So I hope you will all tune in for that, and I think you'll enjoy it. And we'll turn to Steve in just one more second, but I just wanted to tell first the story of the first time I went to Burr Oak. Now, I always like to say Iowa has three connections to Laura Ingalls Wilder. There is the Laura papers at the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library and Museum. There is the blind school at Vinton that Mary attended. And there is also the Burr Oak Hotel, where the Ingalls family worked and lived from 1876 to 1877. And Burr Oak was actually one of my first Laura sites that I visited. And the funny thing was, I was shooting slide film at the time to put together my very first Laura Ingalls Wilder presentation. And I took a picture of the Masters Hotel, and I got home, and the roof looked like a Howard Johnson's. It was bright orange. There was a spot on the film exactly the shape of the roof in this huge day glow orange color. So I made an entire separate trip to go up there just to get another picture of the outside of the hotel without the flash effect. And that picture didn't turn out either. So it actually took me about 3 years to get my first decent picture of the Masters Hotel at Burr Oak, but it certainly has come a long way since then. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on Steve. I hope. There we go. Steve? Steve, are you there now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We're having more than our fair share of technical difficulties tonight, but that's all behind us now, right?
Cool.
So do you want to just sort of start out telling our listeners what you know, about yourself a little bit, how you started to work at the museum and what you do?
Sure. I moved to Decorah, Iowa with my spouse, Sarah, after our daughter attended Luther, and we had a chance to move somewhere, and we liked Decorah. So we moved here, and a couple of years after being here, the executive director of the Laura Ingalls Wilder Park and Museum position came open. And so I applied, and I had read the books to our daughters as they were younger, and knew somewhat, but not a whole lot, about the situation, and so was hired to take that position in March of 2008.
Well, you've done just a really outstanding job with it. I think that you're probably one of the most, what would be the right word? I want to say responsible, but that isn't quite right. But I know you even suggested they cut your hours during the winter so that the budget would be easier to make. That is just, I think, phenomenal.
Well, that you don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps.
Well, I think it certainly must. So what do you do as director? What kind of things does your job entail?
Well, I'm the buck stops here person, I guess you would say. I have the joy of working with the rest of the staff. We have about 3 year-round part-time persons, and then the summer staff that we hire additional persons when our busier season is, usually high school, college-age students. And then also we have the volunteers for the organization that I get to work with and coordinate their activities. So it's basically making sure that everything from the fundraising special events to the giving of the guided tours to the overseeing that the facilities are cared for, just basically the whole nine yards.
So if one of our listeners turned up in Baroque on any particular day, will you be on hand? For them,
a chance. I'm not always there, but part of the need of a small nonprofit is to make expenses go as far as you can, of course, from what you were sharing earlier. So sometimes I do also, yes, give guided tours as well.
Well, I'm sure everybody would be really glad to get one directly from you. Now, let's look over to, or think back a little bit to when the Baroque was identified as a Laura site, because it's a little different than most of the other sites.
Yes. What our opportunity is to share Laura's unpublished story, because it wasn't in her eight children's books, the original eight books. People had heard something about there was some missing period. There was a period Laura didn't write about. There were a time they lived in Iowa. They didn't always go west, but they actually backtracked a little bit. And as I understand the story, the curator down in Mansfield at the museum and her husband, the Litchies, wanted to come to Burr Oak and check out the story of what they had heard of what was going on in Iowa, so that when they had the many guests come to Missouri, they would be able to share the story. So they showed up in 1968 and then put out a little pamphlet, and the first pamphlet about Burr Oak was called The Ingalls Family from Plum Creek to Walnut Grove via Burr Oak, Iowa. And it was a very good little pamphlet to give people information, although there were some inaccuracies in there that confused people. For example, the wrong building was pictured as, in the original, as the hotel that the Ingalls family worked and stayed in. So that was confusing people. So that was corrected over time, though. And from that booklet coming out in 1970, then, some local persons did the research and checked through the deeds. David DeCoux, one that did a lot of work, I understand, in the courthouse checking, and they were able to purchase the correct place. However, it's not something you would have purchased if you were in your right mind in terms of just the building was falling down. I mean, it was in literal need of restoration and repair. So they purchased it in 1973. And then 100 years after the Ingalls were in town, living in town in 1876, the museum opened in 1976.
Well, to be fair, though, the building that they had identified, and you will still see in some of the older publications labeled, was actually a hotel, too.
Yes, the America House Hotel actually sat across the street and just north of our present visitor center. And so it's sort of fun because even Rose was taken there when she came in 1932 on a road trip. But she said, no, this is not what my mother described, because her mother had told her about the two front doors on the main street. And so when they were corrected, then they took her to the right place, and she was able to meet the person. And the house lady let her in and looked through, and she said, yes, this is what my mother described.
Well, it really was great that it was still there and that they were able to save it. Now, if you ever do get to go to Burr Oak, listeners, one of the things that you'll get to see are some early pictures of this work. And really, they literally tore the foundation out and replaced it. They had some of the Army Corps of Engineers come in and put the present foundation there. They had to tear off an addition. So it really changed a lot to make it look back like it had been as a hotel.
Yes, even the pictures of the main street that we have dating from the early 1900s have the two-story addition on the south side of the building. And so they went way back to a Tales of Travel, Life, and Love history book that George Bent had written of Burr Oak, and found one of the original 1870 pictures of the building and used it as the guide to restore it back to what it had been in that time.
Well, it's really amazing that they still have a picture because, I mean, it was just a little nondescript place, and it isn't even really the center of the picture. So it's just wonderful that they were able to find that. And we're going to come back to George Bent a little bit later, so everybody remember that name. But one of the things that I always think is just really incredible about that restoration process is that there were four people, the David Decoe, Lorraine Hoke, Gene Jenkes, and Lynn Danielson, and they literally mortgaged their houses to buy this place. And if it wasn't for them, it would have fallen down long ago and been another one of those, this is where this used to be sites. So I think Laura fans certainly owe them a big debt of gratitude, because instead we've got this lovely museum to go to that really makes us see what Laura's life was like then.
And it's now been 35 years that their efforts have rewarded people who have come from around the world and across the country to find out this, what used to be called the missing link aspect. David, as I understand, David Decoe was a Baroker who had read the books and then was just really enthralled by the idea that the author of these books that he enjoyed so much had lived right in the same community he did. And then the others, two of the others, Jean and Lorraine, were school teachers, and then Lynn Danielson was the librarian at the Northwind Community School. And so they all had interest as well in the books, and when they discovered what they had, they really did. Well, it wasn't a super expensive price because it was so run down, but they did buy the process and then turn it over to the incorporation after they had secured it and taken care of it.
No, it's just really a great story, and I think from that, just that story alone, it's worth a trip to any Laura fan to find out about it. Now, I'm guessing that probably one of the number one questions that you get asked most frequently is, why isn't Burr Oak in the book? So do you want to do your best stab at that?
Well, a lot of people who are familiar with Laura's story know that it was a time of they weren't going west. Things weren't looking up. They had just gone through the grasshopper plague out in southwestern Minnesota, and had traveled back to southeastern Minnesota to visit Peter and Eliza Ann, worked there for a little bit to make some money before they headed to Burr Oak. And it was, of course, there in South Troy on the farm that Peter and Eliza had that the only son of Charles and Carolyn, little Charles Frederick or Freddie, passed away at the age of 9 months. So a lot of people say it's because it was such a dark time and a down time, and things weren't looking up. And Laura Rose even reported that there was too much to put in. You couldn't write everything, and Laura's books were true, but she didn't include everything of the stories. What we find interesting, Sarah, is that we have a letter that Laura wrote some 6 years before she passed that says the reason she didn't put Baroque in her books is that it would bring in too many different people. And in writing a story, you need to keep the reader's interest to the principal people and not scattered among so many. But she does comment in that letter that she remembers the parts of 2 years they were here with much fondness. She had good memories of the place.
In fact, the little article, or the letter she wrote to the paper confirming she lived there, has been published as a brochure, and they call it "It Was a Lovely Place," which I think is a very nice compliment.
Yes.
Now,
indeed. And she had, well, she talks in that letter about waiting for her friend Alice Ward and sitting on the steps of the Methodist Church as she waited, and then them walking south to the cemetery and them enjoying the beautiful carvings and reading the inscriptions. And she also described the cemetery as a marvelous place for people to sleep the rest of their time until Judgment Day. So she seemed quite entranced by the beauty of the... And, of course, back in that time, cemeteries were park-like and a place where people could find green space, a place to go and relax and honor those resting there, but also enjoy the beauty and the serenity of the place.
That is very true. Often people are hesitant anymore about cemeteries, but cemeteries used to be a very important kind of part of people's lives, that they would go to take care of the graves before we dumped everybody into perpetual care. And there
go ahead.
Oh, and there really wasn't quite the horror of them there is now, which as there is a cemetery literally right next door to my house, I kind of still have a little bit of that attitude, I guess.
Well, the Ingalls family, you know, they had death in their family, and when we take school children on tours of the cemetery during their trips, field trips and things, we look at some of the carvings, and when you look at the Victorian influence of how they actually carve stone to make it look like draperies laying across the corner of a stone, or tassels hanging from a beautiful tablecloth. The monuments, the stones themselves, were actually to portray a home-like and a serene and a beautiful setting, so that their loved one could be in a, quote, comfortable situation in their resting.
We actually have a caller on the line, so let's go ahead to them. Area code 801, you're on the line. Hello.
Hi there. I love the show. I got to say that first.
Oh, thank you.
I've listened to all of the archive shows, but I had to call in this week, and I missed the first part of the show. I understand you talk about cemeteries, so I guess I'll make my question about that. The Ingalls family, are they all dispersed throughout the United States in different cemeteries, or are they do they have a family plot anywhere?
In DeSmit is the family plot, where all of the family except for Laura, Almanzo, and Rose, and those three are interred down in Mansfield, the cemetery down in Missouri.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yes. And I will mention, too, that Royal is buried in Spring Valley.
We just went by that today, actually. That was interesting.
It's a nice cemetery, but I'll tell you, he's under this tree, and it is, like, impossible to get a decent shot of that stone. I have tried hours of the day and night.
They do have a little marker right at the one entry, though, that says where the wilder resting places are.
Yeah, I would encourage anybody who is interested to go out. Oh, we got a little feedback there. I'm going to take you back offline, caller, just because we were getting a little feedback.
Sure.
But I will continue to say, though, I would encourage anybody who wants to go to any of the cemeteries to do that anymore. They're all very well marked. It's very easy to find any of the graves, and even, you know, the little sort of side places like Spring Valley. And if you want to, you can actually, you know, find things like, I was just asked a question last night about Eliza Jane's grave down in Crawley, Louisiana. So there's, you know, other relatives spread around, but those are the main ones in DeSmet.
And Dr. Payne in Independence, too, is another site
with
personality.
And they're all nicely marked, so I encourage you to go out. My mother always says we always end up in a cemetery on vacation looking for dead wilders. And I point out, to be fair, sometimes they're Ingalls, but she doesn't seem to think this is much of a point. Let's kind of go on. So we were talking about the cemetery. Then I guess, if people want to know about Baroque, now it wasn't actually in Laura's books, but there are actually two books, one fictional, one not, that talk about Baroque. And you can get them both from your gift shop, right?
There's actually three when you think about Pioneer Girl that Laura wrote originally, her unpublished autobiography. And some of our staff have just secured the microfilms from the Hoover Library and have been getting some copies made of the original handwritten version of that to compare against the printed copies, just for curiosity's sake. But yes, the Pioneer Girl, the original unpublished of Laura's, as well as William Anderson has put together the Iowa story, which is taken based on Laura's unpublished, as well as other letters and documentations and research he's done. And then there's also information about Mary attending the Vinton School for the Blind for the 8 years that she was there, or parts of 8 years. And so the Iowa story is his research and compilation of, well, the four people we mentioned earlier who helped establish the situation there in Baroque, as well as different other connections of letters people wrote, or the Greens from DeSmet who were from Iowa. And so there's quite a bit of information, the boast from Iowa in the Iowa story about Iowa connections. So it really is the Iowa story. And then as I understand, the publishers, Harper Brothers, but Harper and Rowe, asked Cynthia Ryland, who is an award-winning children's author, to write Old Town in the Green Groves to be a historical fiction written in Laura's style of that information from the unpublished manuscript in Anderson's book, to sort of give a children's book about the Baroque living situation, the stories that happened to the Ingalls when they were in the Old Town. The Old Town because when the Ingalls came here in 1876, it was actually 25 years old and had a brick buildings and fully established Main Street. And so it wasn't the new town of DeSmet or Walnut Grove or Independence that the Ingalls had gone to. It was an old established town.
Now, we get questions sometimes about whether the Old Town in Green Groves is still in print and if it's still available, because there's been some backtracking in support of the spinoff series, I would say.
Yeah. Well, the hard copy is no longer available as a new book, but the paperback are still available, yes.
And if somebody wanted to get either of those from your gift shop, how could they do that?
They could just go to our website, lauraingleswilder.us, and either do it online there or at museum@lauraingleswilder.us. Send us an email requesting either the book or a price list of our gift shop. Or they could call 563-735-5916.
Okay, now as a visitor who's coming to Baroque, let's talk about some of the things that there is for people to see. Baroque's kind of a smallish town. It's about 10 minutes north.
You're kind, very kind to say kind of small.
Well, I it does have an active restaurant, which puts it well above Morse, which is the closest town to me. But it's a fairly small town, probably the smallest of the Laura sites, and it's sort of in a bend of the road because it was bypassed when the highway went through. And it's a very pretty little town, but as they come into town following the very good signage from either end of the, you know, bypassed loop, they come in to sort of the little Four Corners area, and then they, what should they go next?
Well, just one block north of that main Four Corner, on the east side of the road, we have the museum. I'm sorry, on the west side of the road, we have the museum, and diagonally to the north of that is our visitor center in an old Baroque Savings Bank building. So the bank was restored and opened. It was actually not even there when the Ingalls were in town, but opened in 2004 as the new, finally, restoration was finished in 2008, but it opened as a visitor center in 2004 and provided restrooms and a larger gift shop and a little bit of history of Baroque as well and some space for those things so that the museum building could be entirely devoted to telling the story of the Ingalls family.
And I just want to mention that I actually have a picture of it with a tree growing out of the middle because the roof was gone. And so I am just always amazed at what a phenomenal job that you have there. And I don't think you can overemphasize enough to the traveler how nice it is to have those bathrooms, public bathrooms available. I know I have been grateful arriving there for them on several occasions. So
yes,
it's really been a great addition.
It's been a wonderful aspect, and as well as the space that we can devote then to, like I was saying, the letters that Laura has written that talk about Baroque and the Iowa Connection, some letters she wrote to some Tipton, Iowa school children that we have copies of. These are early letters, 1933. My next book, Farmer Boy, will be coming out in October. Those are very interesting to read about and to look at on the wall there. So that's allowed that space to spread out a little bit and have more available that way.
And you have a nice little gift shop in there, too. And then there's the jail vault, which bank vault. And this bank was actually robbed once, right?
Correct. It is the Baroque is the smallest community in the county to have a bank and the site of our county's first bank robbery here in Winneshiek County. I don't know how I get the question, how many bank robberies have there been? I don't know how many there have been, but I know we were the first in that little. And some people do, Sarah, think that the vault with the metal gate between the safety deposit area and the bank storage area is a jail vault. We get that a lot. Oh, come look at the jail cell. Well, it's not. It's just a separation of two areas of the vault itself. And you mentioned the tree growing up through the roof. Well, part of the reason the floor of that vault room is original is not only was there the steel-lined vault, but there was a brick ceiling above that, another barrier for any kind of robber, I suppose. But that extra brick above helped protect the vault so that it stayed and didn't get holes up through it for the weather to attack the building when it was empty for about 20 years.
Well, it's a very nice example of sort of that 1900, 1910 commercial architecture. And if you're into that, it's worth a look just for that, how they've repurposed the building over the years. It really is a nice thing. And it's really kind of special to Laura fans because the story goes how Rose figured out that she was in Baroque because she was doing a trip through Iowa in the 1930s. If you look at her Saturday Evening Post article, Who's Who and Why, she mentions that she loved Iowa City at night, or she loved Cedar Rapids at night and Iowa City anytime, which I think she just said to annoy me because I had to track down where she was here, and she really wasn't here that long. But anyway, she started asking where Baroque was, and it is practically to the Minnesota border. Nobody in an Iowa City or Cedar Rapids could tell her. But to get from Iowa City to Spring Valley back then, you pretty much had to go through Baroque. And as she's driving along, there she sees on the bank window Baroque, and hops out and finds out all about where her mother lived. So I think it's really great that you were able to restore that part of the story.
Well, and also the post office for years, as well as a barber shop, were in the old bank building after the bank closed. And so it has a long lineage of being of service to the community. So this is just another way that the building itself is serving the community.
Well, so then we're going to move on. The visitors have come to the visitors center. They've gotten their tickets, and then you take them from there as a group over to the hotel, correct?
Yes, our tours happen whenever we have people who are ready to go. So there's no set schedule or anything. If one person comes and is ready for a tour, we take them on the tour. You know, if five people come, whatever it is, we want to facilitate people giving that tour experience and being part of that. So, there's no set thing. It's whenever we have someone or our group ready, we take them across and point out a few places that, as you said, are no longer there, but to show where around the community. For example, the Congregational Church sat where the Stedmans, who invited the Ingalls to come run the hotel with them, and the Ingalls attended church when they were there in it. The schoolhouse, the site of the building that the Ingalls family rented, the two-story brick house where the fourth daughter, Grace Pearl, was born in 1877. So, yes, we point those things out, as well as the where the grocery store sat that the Ingalls rented the upstairs of. We like to point out that in the about a year period, parts of 2 years, that the Ingalls were in Burr Oak, they actually lived in three different locations. And, of course, that supports people's ideas of paws, itchy feet to travel and move around. But I always find that the Ingalls story has a lot to do with circumstances and what's going on. And them not being just flighty, but being pretty intentional about making changes in their situation. And even to the point of Carolyn finally saying, no, we're not moving anymore. You know, it wasn't just wham-wham. There were a lot of specific reasons that they moved in their various places in life. But as we get over to the hotel building then, people think it's such a small building on the outside. But then we have the joy of opening up that there are three levels in the building and some 14 rooms, and giving them the tour situation as we go in. And it's pretty interesting to see people's reactions, whether they know the story or not. We love for people to ask questions and to help them understand or fill in maybe segments of the story they don't know, or to ask questions if they don't know anything about the story, because that's why we have tour guides, as opposed to just having people read pieces of paper or descriptions on the wall.
Well, it definitely does make a difference. So there's the two kind of public rooms on the second floor. There's bedrooms upstairs where it was renting a place in the bed, not the room usually. And then downstairs is where Ma would have spent most of her time with the kitchen and the dining room. And there's that great kind of pass-through area. I just adore that. I'm so glad you guys have opened it up so you can see it a little better. But under the stairs, there's this big shelving unit built in with the ability to pass things through from one side to the other. And I just love that place.
Yes, and it's a joy to help people. Sarah, we just this winter redid the entire building with our displays. And so we've made some what I think are pretty significant changes that I think open up the visitors' understanding of what was going on when the Ingalls were there. So we've made it so that you can go behind the parlor. There was a longtime boarder who stayed there, Mr. Bisbee. And so we've actually opened up so that you can go through the original doorway, as Mr. Bisbee would have, into
oh,
that
really?
Room and see how it was related to the rest of the arrangements of things. And so taking Mr. Bisbee's room and tried to, let's say, authenticate or place it so that there's only one bed in there. He paid 75 cents to have his own bed. So we wanted to try and show, you know, this was his space. He paid for this space, not just a bed, but the entire room that way. And so a lot of extra things that were in the room, like there was a treadle sewing machine in that room before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was there because there was space for it, but we've moved that out. So the only things in Mr. Bisbee's room now pertain to helping the guest understand Mr. Bisbee's experience in town and the stories of him.
And so that's great.
We think the story now is much easier for people to grasp and to understand how the Ingalls and Bisbee interacted and related. And we're really happy with the new, if you will, situation we have at the museum. And, well, the parlor is a sitting room, right? So
mm-hmm.
we have taken the parlor and made it a space to help people get a fuller sense of the family, what their lives were like and how they were and different situations. So we've expanded our display about Mary and the school at Vinton, including the copies of the registry from Vinton where she signed in. And Herb Charles signed her in, I guess you would say. And there's some very interesting things and questions, like what was the financial condition of the family?
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people think it would be poor, but actually it's written as moderate in that registry.
Hmm.
So there's just, you know, help. And we've gotten a Braille stylus, or a Braille slate and stylus.
Yes.
So we can some Braille alphabet cards. So we can help the guests understand when Mary went to learn how to do Braille, how she actually had to use the stylus. And so we were really happy with sharing that part of the Iowa story as well, because that is a very strong connection the Ingalls had to Iowa.
It certainly is. And I think those all, I can't wait to get back up to Baroque now. Before we go on to the other things that you can do around town, why don't we just go ahead and say now when your Laura days are going to be this year?
The fourth weekend of June, so it'd be the 25th and 26th, Saturday and Sunday. And we have a theme of images of the past this year.
Well, I
this
really...
This is our 35th anniversary, and so we're excited to think about how things were in the past and what was going on in the past and how things looked and just a general sense. So we're, of course, inviting people if they'd like to come in costume or dressed appropriately to a period, however they think that's portrayed. We'd sure enjoy to have people come dressed that way.
Well, I hope that I can get up there this year. It's on my schedule for right now, so I'm hoping that I can come see. I can't wait to see all the changes that you've made.
Well, and I'd like to expand that a little bit if we'll talk later sometime, okay?
Sure.
Okay, sounds good.
And let's see. So we've looked at the hotel. We've come out of the bottom of the hotel.
Wait a minute. Just one more. Let me say a couple more things about the hotel, okay?
Oh, sure.
We have now in the room that we believe the Stedman stayed in a little display about the different people of Burr Oak. And I think there's one significant, anyway, character, W.H. Reed, who was the school teacher at 16 and 17 years old during the years that they were there. Mary received her fifth grade reader when she was there in Burr Oak. And Mr. Reed was an elocutionist, and so he was very interested in helping the students, Mary, Laura, and the others, learn how to, quote, speak, the value of language, the way things can be portrayed. Was even he an actor in the local theatrical productions? And so Charles tells a wonderful story about the girls practicing their reading lessons, and later he telling them how the men would gather around the stove downstairs. This is when they were living above Kimball's Grocery. And as the girls practiced their recitations, the men were listening downstairs to this entertaining presentations. So the girls were just doing their schoolwork, but the men were getting quite a show for free, if you will, downstairs. So Reed, I think, is an important character in Laura's development of appreciating not only language, but also words and the power of words.
I think you're right. He did definitely have a strong influence. He sounds like a wonderful teacher from everything that I've seen. And he's absolutely right. Elocution is very important, and it's sadly lacking through most of modern schools. I always like to do a little sample of an elocution speaking engagement when I'm doing one of my programs, because I really think you're right. It's absolutely important.
I like to, on the tour, present Paul Revere's Ride without elocution, just in monotone, and then just the first opening five lines, you know, but to give it an elocutionary base and really let people feel the power of the story. I love it, yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, I memorized most of that poem once.
Well, I don't know what's so sad about it, but...
Well, I with prompting, I think I could probably still do it. It was a lot of work, but I was following the dictates of my great-grandfather that the memory is a muscle, and you have to practice using it to be able to pull things up. I don't know if it helped my memory any, but I can still do a bit of it.
Well, I think we have a lot to be thankful for of Carolyn Ingalls being an educated woman and really wanting her daughters to have education. Because I think if Laura hadn't been educated as such, we may have lost a great series.
I think you're right. Okay, well, is there anything else
we
you
were
wanted?
Going out the lower doors, yes. Is when I cut you off earlier. But we're excited. We're just getting our covered wagon rebuilt this year, so we'll have a whole new wagon. We have been given a wonderful gift by some local artist. Here in Winnesee County, there's been a barn quilt drive to get different barns to put quilts patterns up. And we were given some Burr Oak leaves and acorns in a quilt patch.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we have displayed that now out by the front sidewalk along the fence that goes south of the museum. And it's just a gorgeous Burr Oak leaf with stylized acorn pattern. Just marvelous. So we're excited about to be part of that whole quilt square, barns quilt trail, if you will, that we're trying to establish in the county. And
well,
then also, we had a local wood artist, and actually our volunteer of the year this year, make a brand new welcome sign on the front of the museum. And for folks who aren't familiar with our logo, we have a little oval that has the hotel building and a covered wagon going past the front with a couple of oak leaves hanging off the front. Well, he has rendered that in wood. So it's a beautiful cherry oval with different types of wood coloring and shading the whole picture. So it's just a marvelous photo op to have people take their picture there in front of the welcome sign now.
Oh, I love getting my picture taken by things. That's just...
There you go.
I sadly do. I have a whole folder of pictures of me about it. Okay.
Well, our previous welcome sign, unfortunately, when you stood in front of it to get your picture, you couldn't tell where you were because... So now we've got Laura Ingalls Wilder up high, and so people can stand there and still have the museum's name above it. So
that's good. I'm sure people will appreciate that. And if anybody out there doesn't know what a barn quilt is, if you go to my blog, Trundle Bed Tales Radio, and you search for barn quilt, there's a nice explanation that should pop up for you. And I'm so glad to hear that Winnesheek County is doing that. I really think it is a natural fit with the Laura sites where people want to kind of get a feel for the landscape to kind of have this excuse to drive through the county.
Well, and just coming up 52, instead of turning off on the North Wind Road, you continue on, and there on one of the barns there is Laura's bear paw quilt.
Ooh.
So that sort of starts our Laura Ingalls Wilder trail, and then Burr Oak, our quilt in town, sort of finishes it off. So we're hoping to have a whole series between here and there to be able to highlight the Laura aspects.
Well, good luck with that. I really think that's
Thank you.
An incredible good idea, so I hope it works out.
Yeah, and the local art students have just been wonderful in helping to draw a layout, and then local volunteers painting, doing the painting and things. So it's
okay.
A wonderful project.
Now, we had come out the back door. We'd come up the hill past the covered wagon. We'd mentioned before that there is a cemetery, but I just want to mention again, I think it's a lovely place to wander around. And it what really got me was when you were doing one of your cemetery walks. I got to to take that, and it really kind of made the stories come alive. And I like to point out some of the stones now when I'm telling people about Baroque, because it really, there's some interesting stories in that cemetery. Laura was right. She had always had a good sense for the dramatic.
Yes. We also, just north of the cemetery, own the Advent Church building. And we're very happy that one of our new board members is quite supportive of getting things going. And so we've actually made plans to clean the building up on the inside and to see if we can host the local memorial services on Memorial Day there at the Baroque Cemetery.
If nothing else,
have a dry space if it should happen to be rainy. But in the past, the memorial service has included a ringing of the bell as the names have been read of the veterans. And so we're hoping that we can actually use the Advent Church bell as part of that ceremony. So,
well, that will be really nice.
Again, trying to support and be a community member in Baroque and establish some links there and support each other in our efforts.
Now, one thing that I think's very clever and of you guys to do is you've had some focus on Grace Ingalls, since one of the Ingalls family was actually born in Iowa. And I think it's just great that you've taken sort of an initiative with that.
Yes, Grace, May 23rd of 1877, she was born in town and maybe took some of that painful edge off little Freddie passing. Just not too much before then, the previous August. So we think it is significant, and it's interesting when the school groups are in May. We actually get to honor Grace sometimes with school kids there on her birthday. And we've taken, as we divide our kids up into different tours of if we have four groups, then we have the Laura and the Mary and the Carrie or Carolyn Celeste, if you will, and the Grace Pearl groups. So rather just 1, 2, 3, 4, we like to get them thinking about the family members as they're, some of the boys don't appreciate him being called Mary, but it's just the name of the group. It's not their name. So we help them understand that. Mm. But yes, Grace is, well, Grace is a person that, you know, helped care for Mary when Ma passed and took, you know, a valuable part, even though in some of the books she's not, you know, just too small to do anything or whatever. She was a family member, and she did grow to be, you know, one of the four sisters that's pictured in the family gathering and things. So, yes, help people understand that good things and important things in the Ingalls' lives happened during their time in Burrock.
Definitely. And I just wanted to make sure that I got a mention of this in, just because I think it's so cool. Another famous person, sort of, from Burrock was George Bent, and I believe you mentioned his book earlier. Do you want to tell people what he was famous for?
Well, he was actually the pastor's son of the pastor who started the Congregational Church in Burrock that the Stedmans and the Ingalls attended. But later, he started a manufacturing company in Chicago that made pianos and pump organs. And with the success of his manufacturing company, he had the resources so that he did decide to go ahead and write his Burrock history book and self-publish it. So his Tales of Travel, Life, and Love was the result of his successful business enterprise and having the money to be able to publish after he got the stories from the different persons in town and wrote it up, his Burrock history. And that book is the one that was invaluable as far as resources of the old pictures and the old plat of Burrock and a lot of wealth of information.
And being a pump organ manufacturer was really pretty important back in the day, because pump organs were one of sort of the symbols of the middle class, because the actual workings of them were fairly cheap, but they could put these elaborate cases on them. So you could have a very fancy looking thing in your house, even if you couldn't really afford a piano or a piano's upkeep. So I'm sure he did a great trade in that. And you actually have an example of his work there at the museum.
Yes, we're so fortunate that we were provided with a George Bent crowned organ. So we invite people to play it too during the tours. If they, even if they don't play, they would like to experience the work it was to pump and to use your knees for the swells and to play the keys. And it was quite a workout. But the music itself was just a joyous thing to have in a home, of course.
Yes, it is a workout. Once upon a time when I worked at Usher's Ferry, one of my many, many jobs was that I played for the church services for the weekend, Civil War weekend. And
wow.
To play that thing off and on for an hour is quite a bit of work.
Yes.
But it isn't that bad. I mean, once you get into it, it's sort of, you get into the rhythm, like a treadle sewing machine.
Right.
But the really cool thing, I think, is not only do you have one of his organs in Burrock, which is amazingly cool and fitting.
Mm-hmm.
When I went out to Malone, or Malone Burrock, as they like to call it, for the for the bus trip that the Burrock Museum sponsored, because you also are a leader in doing that, there we got out to the Farmer Boy house, and they had a pump organ. And what kind should it be but a George Bent?
Isn't that wonderful?
I really do think it was really just so cool that there was that kind of accidental connection between Malone and Burrock.
Well, and that does speak to how successful he was. You know, he sold a lot of pianos and pump organs. You know, for them to last and to show up, that speaks, you know, it wasn't necessarily rare to find one. During that time, anyway, he was an accomplished manufacturer.
Yes, I think so. And when I get onto my life goals list of actually having room to buy some of these big things, I hope I can get a pump organ, too. I think that would be nifty.
And I was just reading of the family, of course, building a whole room to put the one in and dismiss.
Well, when
Mary came back, she would have something to play.
Because they were claiming that middle class status, that they could actually have No, Pump Organ. And actually, in my house, we have, it's my grandparents' house. There's a room we call the piano room that was built primarily to hold the piano.
How nice.
So I guess that impulse kind of stuck around.
Yeah, it was no longer a claim shanty. It was a home.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, we're starting to run out of time, but I did want to mention one thing about your Laura days, one last thing, because I just really think you do such an interesting thing there compared to the other museums about how you have your little Miss Laura contest work.
Yes, some people have found it limiting because they can't drive in from a far distance and be in the Laura contest. What we do is ask our contestants to submit an essay about Laura and then to go before judges that morning. And then if they are crowned Little Miss Laura or Young Almanza, and we also crown an alternate, so two girls each year have an opportunity to be used by our museum as ambassadors for the museum as well as Laura's story. And we have 9, 10, 11-year-old girls or same age Young Almanza contestants who for the next year then will ride in the parades in our covered wagon, go to the state fair, be part of our tourism booth, go to different school groups and talk. And so the county fair at our, we sponsor a basket that goes for fundraising for the county fair. Anyway, they make presentations throughout the year and represent. So we just can't have someone that's, 200 miles away. We need someone within the local counties here that, and lots of them are school children who have come in May and gotten enthused about it and submitted their essays then and application for the contest.
Well, I judged for a couple years, and it was, there really was a lot of talent there, and I think that's so great because they actually have a job, and I think it's such a great experience for them to get to be basically an ambassador for the museum and learn to kind of give back to their community. And I just think it's phenomenal that you do it that way. Although if you're looking for a look-alike contest, you can also find that in Pepin during their Laura days and in Walnut Grove during their Laura days.
Sure.
So there are other opportunities if that's what you're looking for. Well, we got about 2 minutes left. So did you have anything else that you specifically wanted to add before we wrap it up?
Well, we would just, as I was mentioning earlier, our task and opportunity and joy, actually, is in revealing Laura's unpublished story. So the joy we have is, as guests come, is to help them understand what didn't get into Laura's books and what was going on before and after and during the time they were here in Burr Oak. So that's why we love questions. That's why we love to know, do you know the show? Do you know the books? Do you know both? To understand where our guests are coming from so that we can use our time to really help fill in the gaps or answer and raise questions. Sometimes we learn so much when folks ask questions and it's, well, I don't know, we're going to have to look that one up. Or we'd love to be baffled. Well, that's not to say we're not confused most of the time anyway, but anyway, you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much fun to present Laura and her family and what's going on, or was going on during that time.
Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight, Steve. I hope everybody makes a plan to come out to Burr Oak real soon. And I think we'll have to have you come on again because we had a couple things on our list of things to talk about tonight that we didn't get to.
Just let us know.
So I'm going to put you back in the screening room for right now. And then I want to just remind everybody that we'll be looking for a May roundup somewhere. I don't have it scheduled yet, but the first couple days of May. And then May 4th, our next episode is going to be about the Seeking Laura Letters project that I've been working on, and I'm going to talk about how that sort of got started and what we've done so far and what you can do to help. So I hope that you will tune in then on May 4th, which is again another Wednesday, and it would be at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Mountain Time, and 7 p.m. Pacific Time. So I hope you'll join us then. And we're going to play out a new version of our theme song, played on a pump organ. Good night. Thank you.